He is risen indeed. Thank you. And we're talking about death again. It's like going back to Good Friday, isn't it? You know, we've been eating chocolate eggs all afternoon, haven't we? I was worried about getting it on my shirt, you know. We've been celebrating and we've got to talk about death again. But I hope there's some glimmers of hope here that I can reveal to you, even in the death of Saul. I hope that you won't go away tonight totally depressed, thinking about death and gloom. I hope you'll go away encouraged and uplifted, because it is Easter Day. He is risen indeed. Jesus is alive. Death has been defeated. So I hope I'll bring out these glimmers of hope for you tonight in this reading. So do bear with me. Now, this is what I want to cover tonight, up here on this screen, briefly outlined. A brief history of Saul, lessons to be learnt from his life, and then reaction to his death from David, and particularly in his companions. Anger, grief, lamentation. So let's look at a brief history of Saul. What can we learn from his life? Now, as we've been going through these weeks, you'll have realised, I'm sure, that Saul had a lot of faults. But I feel sorry for him, because he's a bit of a baddie of the piece, really, compared with David to a high degree, although David was not without his faults. When he was chosen as king, he seemed to suit the part well. He was the kind of person who looked like a king, looked like a leader. He was, 1 Samuel 9:1 tells us, he was an impressive young man, without equal among the Israelites, a head taller than many of the others, a good-looking chap, I'm sure, just like Peter here, or me. Well, maybe Peter. Anyway, he was impressive, he was tall, he was good-looking, just the kind of guy who would look like and make a good king. When he first met Samuel the prophet, he came to Samuel because he had a problem. I don't know if you can remember back, this is a while ago in Samuel, but the problem was to do with donkeys. Saul's dad had lost some donkeys. And so the bloke with Saul, who was out searching for the donkeys, said, "Look, we're never going to find these. I've heard there's a prophet around here called Samuel, so let's go and see him." So Saul went off to see Samuel to find the donkeys, but he got more than he bargained for, because when he turns up to meet Samuel, Samuel then says, "Right, I'm going to anoint you king." And he anoints him king, and fortunately he did get his donkeys as well. But he ends up anointed king by Samuel on God's behalf. So he got more than he bargained for. And his leadership at this point, right at the beginning, seems quite inspired and God-centered. And what happens is he goes to rescue this place called Jabesh, or Jabesh Gilead, which occurs in our reading later. And he defeats the Ammonites who are besieging it. So he has a great moment. He seems in tune with God. But unfortunately, after this, things seem to go downhill quite a lot for him. And he moves more and more out of sync with God. And he continually gets things wrong. He doesn't quite hit the mark. It's not good for Saul. For example, he doesn't take the lead and fight the enemy with Goliath. He lets David, a boy, fight him instead. And also then he's very jealous of David, because David becomes more popular than him. He has great rages. He tries to kill David. Here you are, Rembrandt's interpretation of the event, I think. He tries to kill David, who'd been brought in to soothe his temper by playing the harp. Now, certainly, if I was there, he would have killed me immediately, because I can't play the harp, and it would be most unpleasant. But David apparently was good at this. But he tried to kill him. What gratitude is that? And Saul shows lots of examples of poor judgment in various situations. And he does seem to repent now and again, but it's a bit half-hearted, and he soon swings back into his old ways. He's a tragic figure in many ways. And then we have Saul's son, Jonathan. Saul's son, Jonathan, as we heard in our reading, they were very, very close, him and David. And Jonathan manages to save David from Saul's clutches on several occasions. Now, I wonder how Saul felt about that. You know, his son's very close to David, who he's jealous of. Jonathan did stick with Saul, but how did Saul feel about that relationship too? Now, if we jump forward to the New Testament and look at what it says about the problems of humanity, if we ignore God's ways of doing things, we see this list, which I'm sure you're familiar with, in Paul writing to the Galatians. And sadly, Saul seems to reflect, unfortunately, quite a few of these things that we shouldn't be doing. I'm thinking particularly of maybe jealousy, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, I don't know, fits of rage. I mean, you can see Saul fitting into that picture quite easily. And at the end, as we heard last week when Anne spoke to us, he even consulted a witch, although he'd banned witchcraft, because Saul had died and he had a problem with the Philistines. Samuel had died, not Saul. Saul hasn't died yet. And so he turned to witchcraft to try and get in touch with Samuel, who'd always advised him. And of course, it all went wrong. It all went wrong. He brings up the witch, he brings up Samuel via the witch, and he gets more than he's bargained for again. And Samuel tells him not how to beat the Philistines, who are causing him lots of trouble, but that he's actually going to be defeated by them and he's going to die because he's ignored God's will. So this witchcraft didn't do him any good, and he faces defeat in one last final battle with the Philistines, and that's where the last chapter of 1 Samuel comes in. He's critically wounded. Because his armor bearer won't kill him to put him out of his misery, he kills himself falling on his sword. So what a tragic end for this man who initially seemed to have so much promise, so much potential. What a wasted life in so many ways. He had some good moments, but there was so much that was not good and was not fruitful. And I think that's a reminder for us too, that our lives should be focused on doing things God's way, showing the fruit of the Spirit. Otherwise, we stand the risk of wasting our gift of life we've received from God in the same way that Saul wasted it in many ways. And it may be that, you know, you're sitting here tonight and you've had a period in the past where you felt you were really in tune with God and you were very close to God, but somehow things have got out of sync and you're not feeling like that now. It may be like Saul that you were feeling like that. He had his good time in the beginning, but it's kind of drifted off. He provides a tragic warning for us all not to continue down that path, but to turn back to God. But the good news is there's always a fresh start with God. So if you're in that position, turn back to him now. He wants you to come back to him, to be in harmony with him and fruitful with him. So let's be more positive. Let's look at the fruits of the Spirit now. This is what we should aim for. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. That's what we should aim for if we don't want to waste our lives, if we want to be fruitful for God, if we want to learn from Saul's mistakes. So the first point really is that Saul's life provides a tragic warning for us all. So I'd encourage us all on this Resurrection Day to focus on being fruitful for God in the year ahead. That's the first thing. And now the reaction to Saul's death from David and his companions. Now, I want to point out something here, and it's a bit of a subtle point. But if we can have this next slide up. Right, you see the bit in red. Now, I think there's an element of sarcasm in here that commentators point out. It's quite a subtle point, but when it talks about Saul's death, they cut off his head and stripped off his armor once he was dead. And then the enemies, the Philistines, sent messengers throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim the news in the temple of their idols and among their people. And you might think, okay, yeah, they just sent the news round. But I think there's an element of sarcasm here. To proclaim the news in the temple of their idols, their gods. You see, the writer, I think, is making a point here that their gods had to be told, like the people, what was going on, because really their gods were useless and they didn't really know what was going on. If you look in the prophets, particularly Isaiah, there's scathing comment upon these idols of the nations around, who are seen as unseeing, unhearing, needing fixing down so they don't fall over. You know, there's a lot of sarcasm there in looking at the idols. And I think that is coming out in this statement, to proclaim the news in the temple of their idols. The idols need telling because they don't know what's going on, because they're unseeing and unhearing. They need informing of Saul's death. So the writer of Samuel is fighting back here. There's fighting talk here, who suggests that even in this dire situation of the defeat of Israel, God is still God. God is still God. And the worthless idols are still idols. In this discouraging situation, it doesn't change anything, because although things are bad, God is still God. And his will is done. And after all, if you remember, God predicted through Samuel that Saul was going to die and there was going to be defeat. God knew what was going to happen. Unlike the idols, who need telling like everybody else because they don't know what's going on. So here is a bit of encouragement for the readers of 1 Samuel, really. Even when things seem bad and depressing, God is still God, and his eventual will is being worked out. And it's the same for us. We sang about it earlier. If we're finding life hard, God is still God, and he cares about our situation. If the church in this country is not growing as fast as the church in the rest of the world, and we can find that discouraging, we remember that God is still God, and he knows what's going on. He's not inactive in working out his loving purposes. If I see the police down the road tonight outside the rugby club because I know someone was attacked there last week. They may have been killed. They may have died in hospital. That's a tragedy just down the road here. I remember that God is still God. God is still God. And in this Easter week, we've been remembering the darkness and despair of Good Friday, when all seemed lost in Jesus' crucifixion. And in that situation, we know that God is God. And with Jesus' resurrection that we're celebrating today, we are reassured that God knew what he was doing in bringing hope and life from the awfulness and the death of Jesus. So here is one of my glimmers of hope that I promised at the beginning of the talk. God is God, no matter what's going on. And another glimmer of hope comes along now, as the men of Jabesh-Gilead rescue Saul's body. I mentioned them earlier. And they ensure that he has a more fitting burial. The Philistines don't have it all their own way. If we see the next slide. There we are. So that what they did, they took down the bodies of Saul and his sons. They burned them, then they took their bones and buried them. And that was considered a much more fitting burial than the ignominy that their bodies had been faced with before. Now, if you remember, I mentioned Saul's major success at the beginning of his reign was when he rescued the city of Jabesh from the Ammonites who were besieging it. And here, the people of that city repay the favor that Saul did them by rescuing his body, and then they mourn their king, fasting for 7 days. So there's another little glimmer of hope here, that the Philistines don't get it all their own way. The people who were helped by Saul earlier have come to help him in his death. Now, the next issue I want to tackle is one that the observant among you, I'm sure, will have spotted. Which account of Saul's death is true? Or did the Amalekite lie? Because if you look in your Bible now, just quickly look at the last chapter of 1 Samuel, chapter 31. You've got an account there of Saul's death. Then look at what the Amalekite says in 2 Samuel, chapter 1. Well, they're not the same. They're not the same. The Amalekite turns up from the battlefield to see David, and he tells him he's put King Saul to death, that Saul was about to die anyway. It should be on the screen, I think, yeah. He says that Saul said to him, "Stand over me and kill me, because I'm in the throes of death, but I'm still alive. So I stood over him and killed him, because I knew that after he had fallen, he couldn't survive." Then he took the crown and his band and brought them to David. But if you look in 1 Samuel chapter 31, the account's different. It says there that Saul was critically wounded. If we could have that slide up now, actually. Saul was critically wounded. And he asked the armor bearer to finish him off, but he wouldn't. He was too scared to do that. So Saul fell on his sword and killed himself. So there's a couple of possible explanations for this. One, the Amalekite could have been lying when he came to David, and he'd merely plundered the body of Saul, brought the crown and the band to David. Or two, the writer, or the person who put together Samuel, had these two accounts of what happened, and he just left them both in to let the reader make up their own mind about what happened. Now, I tend to go with one, personally. I think the Amalekite was lying is the most likely explanation. But I'll let you decide for yourselves. But you may be sitting there wondering about that, so I thought I'd better mention it. Anyway, the main point for us to look at here is the reaction of David. And that was one initially of grief. Although you think David, I think he was genuinely upset. Although Saul had tried to kill him on occasion, David still mourned his death and the death of Jonathan, Saul's son, and also the defeat and the ignominy of defeat of Israel. I think it was a genuine thing. I don't think it was a political move to try and unite Israel, you know, so that David looked good. I don't get that feeling. And David had great creativity. We know he could play the harp. Not only could he do that, but he wrote poetry and songs, as we know. Many of the psalms were written by David. So David then writes a lament, which you can see in full in your Bible in 2 Samuel chapter 1. And this apparently is rated very highly by experts in the field. But I just want to point out the first line of it. "Your glory, O Israel, lies slain on your heights. The mighty have fallen." And I think that was genuine grieving by David there. He was a very emotional guy. If you read about him, he clearly is. And I think he was, you know, he was very, very sad at what had happened, even though this man Saul had been trying to kill him. And he still sees Saul as the Lord's anointed king and leader, despite the fact Saul tried to kill him and made him leave the country, really, for his own safety. So once David and his companions are grieved, mourning, weeping, and fasting, then they deal out brutal punishment to the Amalekite. David called one of his men and said, "Go, strike him down." So he struck him down and died. For David had said to him, "Your blood be on your own head. Your own mouth testified against you when you said, 'I killed the Lord's anointed.'" Now, when I read that, it rang a few bells with me, as it's Easter time. Now, I don't know if it rings any bells with you. And I'm sure David wasn't aware at the time of the prophetic nature of his words. But there's a strong parallel here with Matthew's account of the trial of Jesus. Jesus, of course, being the Lord's anointed King of Kings and Messiah. Jesus was anointed at his baptism, just as Samuel anointed Saul. But Jesus was and is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And you remember the scene, well, I'm sure. Pilate has just asked the crowd if they want Barabbas, a criminal, to be released, or Jesus. The crowd have called for the release of Barabbas, and Pilate knows very well Jesus doesn't deserve death, so he washes his hands. So if we could have the next slide. And then he says, Pilate says, "I'm innocent of this man's blood. It's your responsibility," looking at the people. And all the people answered, "Let his blood be on us and on our children." And then if you look at what David said to the Amalekites, David said, "Your blood be on your own head." You see the parallel. All the people answered in Jesus' situation, "Let his blood be on us and on our children." Because killing the Lord's anointed is always a serious business. It's not condoned by God. David knew this and so wouldn't kill Saul, even when he had a couple of opportunities to do so. And if you've been coming to the series, you'll have heard about those. The Amalekite seems to have had no such qualms, and sadly, the crowd and the Jewish leaders in Jesus' time at his trial had no such qualms either. Both ended up with the blood of the Lord's anointed on their heads, on their conscience, and they were held accountable for doing such a terrible thing. And now, yet we have Jesus on the cross there saying, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them." And there's a glimmer of hope here, even in this. Because out of the death of Saul came a new life, a golden age, if you like, for Israel. When David became king after the death of Saul, things improved for Israel. New life came from the death of the Lord's anointed king, Saul. Out of the death of Saul, new life came to Israel when David became king. And of course, we celebrate today new life coming to humanity through the death of Jesus, the Lord's anointed King of Kings. New life has come to us through the death of Jesus. And that comes through that forgiving nature of God that says to people who even kill the Lord's anointed, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." So here's another sign of positive things coming from the death of Saul, when that golden age of the nation under King David came about. A great glimmer of hope coming out of death. So to sum up, we've looked at the death of Saul, we've looked at his life and the lessons to be learnt from his unfruitfulness, but that can help us to be fruitful. We've looked at the reaction to his death, and we've been reassured that in every situation, however bad things seem, God is God. He's in control. New beginnings are possible both for Israel in its golden age under King David, and for us if we turn to Jesus and follow him, and for our nation if we encourage others to follow him. Tragedies like this down the road, where someone's either nearly killed or has been killed last week while we're worshipping here in church, that kind of thing comes from a nation that's not following Jesus. And we don't want more of that to happen. So may we bear fruit for God and not waste any part of our lives as Saul did. May we continually turn to God and ask his forgiveness so we can be fruitful. May we encourage others to follow Jesus too. May we play our part in bringing his kingdom to our nation so that new life may come increasingly to this place. So let's have a moment's silence as we consider now how fruitful our lives are. Have we been in the past in sync with God, and now we somehow feel out of sync? We'll come back to him. Get in tune again. And let's ask God to help us bear more fruit. Help us to encourage others in our family, amongst our friends, our work colleagues, to faith and fruitfulness too in following Jesus this Easter.